Take me where the promises are real. Let's have an AA meeting. My name's Tim R., and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip speaker meeting on NavaZoom, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. I was unaware when the meeting started, and I've been informed. And most of you may already know, but if you don't, we lost a giant in AA. Clancy I has passed. Our speaker Joyce told me that he had 62 years. Just celebrated 62 AA birthdays and was a member of the Pacific Group. And he'll be greatly missed. Let's have a minute of silent meditation on Clancy I. Thank you, everyone. Again, my name's Tim, and I'm an alcoholic. And we have one last reading. It's based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our NavaZoom room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear tonight's speaker, and we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight, we are giving a warm welcome to Joyce P., and we're so grateful that she has agreed to come speak. She was our old-timers speaker for 2019 last fall at the NAVA Club. I think it was the 37th. There's been decades of old-timers meetings and great speakers. I had invited her to come and tell her story early, but we were going to wait until January or February or something. And then I started booking other speakers, and I double booked the night that she was supposed to speak, and she drove down from Blue Ridge to tell her story. And the other speaker had already arrived and had their entourage, and all the people were getting ready for the readings and all this stuff. And it was a very awkward moment for me. Joyce worked the program. She was a little, I could see that she was a little disappointed, but she was also okay with it and said she would do it again. So I'm so glad that we're doing Zoom right now. So it's a matter of that it's way more convenient than driving back down and then driving back late on a Monday night through the North Georgia mountains. So anyway, I give you Joyce, a good sport, and a hoot. So welcome, Joyce.
Thank you, Tim. My name is Joyce, and I am an alcoholic. Yeah, that night was interesting, to say the least, but I was so tired. I was like, okay, let him talk. Let the man talk. I'm out. I got to go. I'm going home. I'm getting my recliner. We let things happen. I appreciate you mentioning Clancy. We don't put people on pedestals, but there are those that tend to get the respect of many, many folks, and I'm very grateful that I, too, get to stand on the shoulders of giants in this program. I was very blessed when I got here to have the teachers that I had, and, you know, I can only pray today that I live this program the way they taught me to live it and have fun. I do have something I read when I tell my story so that it keeps me right-sized and reminds me of what I'm doing here. This is in step 11 in the 12 and 12. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds. It is by forgiving that one is forgiven. It is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Amen. That is the prayer of St. Francis. Is there anybody here tonight that's fairly new or brand new or in your first few months or first few days of sobriety? Anybody? You can do one of those little icon things and throw your hand up or something. No? All right. Well, good. Welcome to all you old-timers then. I am honored to be here and grateful to you, Tim. Thank you. It is kind of fun to tell your story in your underwear, I got to tell you. I'm kidding. I have my pajamas on. I actually went and just changed shirts. I was like, okay, I just need to change shirts. I'll be okay. So it is good to do this from home. But from my home, I'll just tell you, any moment there may be a cat walk by, and you may hear somebody hissing from the other side. I have four rescues that I'm fostering right now that are on my porch, and the window gets a little action sometimes. So just to give you a little forewarning, there may be some meows in there or hissing. So anywho, and what an honor to speak for the NABBA speaker meeting, the blue chip meeting. This NABBA was where one of my greatest mentors started out, and that was Mary Mack. She was the first copy of the big book that I ever saw. But long before that, I was born in Crawford Long Hospital in downtown Atlanta. And my natural parents, were not together at the time. He was in prison for attempting to kill her while she was pregnant with me. And I found all this out about when I was about 35 years old, when I met her for the first time. I was adopted when I was 18 months old. And my parents never made that a secret, never acted like there was anything, you know, they always said my sister and I were chosen. My older sister was adopted at 3 years old. I was 18 months. And a year later, after all that effort, my little sister was born. So when all the stress was removed, they got pregnant and she came along. And so, you know, we grew up in East Point. My dad ran the motor pool at Fort Mac for 32 years. My mama worked at the Arrow Shirt Company in East Point once we were old enough to be left alone. In that generation, mom stayed home, took care of the kids, dad went to work. And when we learned how to be on our own, we had to have dinner ready. When my mother left about 4 o'clock, we had to have everything ready when my daddy got home. and we all enjoyed it. And we had a pretty good childhood as a little child. I was happy. I was a tomboy. I played with my G.I. Joe. I played with my Army men. And, you know, my little sister, we were in church. My daddy was also a Baptist minister. He was ordained. He did not have his own church. But we were in church every time the doors opened. And my little sister would ask my mother on Saturday night, "Mama, would you please curl mine and Joyce's hair and put a blue bow in Joyce's and a pink bow in mine? Oh, please do that to me. Please do that to me." I could have killed her. I was in that creek the next day with M80s and my G.I. Joe getting those curls out of my hair, blowing up rocks. It was a, you know, who knew where life was going to go. But I had a fun time as a little child. When I was about, and I'll say this, you know, we never lacked for anything. We weren't rich by any means, but there was never any time where I felt any want in our lives. But by today's standards, when I look back at it, I see, and living in Blue Ridge is about the same, but we were very white, for lack of a better way to put it. There was nothing but white people in our little group. White Baptist Republicans. Dear Jesus, I had a long way to haul. So I remember my daddy telling me, "You are," what did he used to say? "You're a Baptist Republican." I don't think so, Daddy. But that was all that he talked about politics, and that was all he talked about race. We didn't go to each other's houses. We were taught to be kind to each other. Be kind to people who were not us. But we weren't supposed to mingle, I guess was the way to put it. And that, you know, that I felt very shortened by that, especially when I got in school and, you know, I had a lot of friends that couldn't come to my house. But anyway, as a child, we played and we had fun and we went to church and we went to visit people on Sunday. And that was it. Mom and Daddy weren't out in restaurants. We went to Morrison's for Sunday dinner. That was it. We didn't go out to eat. There were no drive-thrus back then. You didn't know it was McDonald's, but it wasn't like it is now where that's what you live on. That's not the way it was. My mother cooked and taught us to cook. But when she was about 42, 43, I guess, and the way that I was able to find forgiveness for her behavior was that I think she went into menopause and just snapped because she went off. She was violent. There was nothing that I could do that was right in her eyes. Now, some of the things I did was I asked questions like, why don't we have any people that aren't white in our lives? Because we don't. Why do we this and why do we that? I had a lot of why, and I got a lot of because I said so. So that was not an answer for me, but that was what I got. So our house became a violent place, and I remember a lot of times thinking, you know, she can't kill me, and then not sure that maybe she could, you know, maybe she could. I remember one time she had me, I was laying across my bed, and she had that belt going across my back, and I'm literally biting in my bed not to scream because I did not want her to know that this was, my back felt like she was cutting me. And my little sister was in the bathroom. I could see her sitting up on the counter crying, and I finally yelled for her to call the police. And she couldn't, you know, this was her mother. And these were not days when kids had cell phones. You didn't call the police because your mama pissed you off. It wasn't like that. You didn't call the police. You didn't use the phone without permission. So there was a different world. And I ran away a lot. And nobody ever said, what are you running from? There was a whole lot of, you need to learn how to mind your parents. And do you know that how much you worry your daddy? You need to be a better child. nobody said, are you okay? Is your mother beating the crap out of you? Is your grandfather bothering you? Is he molesting you and your sisters? Because he did. We didn't tell anybody about that either. You know, 2 years of therapy when I got in AA got me through that. And our book tells us sometimes we need outside help. If you've got something torturing you from the past, man, get some help and set yourself free, because it was pretty amazing to me. I couldn't figure out, you know, why I had all these relationships in sobriety, not before sobriety, I just drank. But why I had these relationships, 6 months into them, I'm just angry. I don't want to be near you. Don't touch me. Why do you have to touch me? Get away from me. And it finally hit me. It wasn't these. It was my grandfather. So get help. If you need it, get help. We are in a different time today. You can tell somebody. And you do have a cell phone. Call somebody, you know. Well, actually, tape them and send it to somebody, you know. There was a lot of stuff that as kids back then, we just didn't have any way to say anything. But at 16 years old, I found a way to shut my mother's voice up in my head, telling me I was never going to amount to anything. I found a nice cold beer at my next door neighbor's house. And I thought she hung the moon. I mean, if she had said, just do this, I did that. And that was my first beer. The first drink I ever had was at a football game in College Park. It was Boone's Farm Apple Wine. And some of you had it. Some of you started with it, too, because it was the only thing we could get somebody to buy for us. But I remember that night I got drunk and I dropped some change in a trash can at a football game, and I went in after it. And that was pretty much the way my drinking career went. I was in the trash. I was in the toilet. I'm hugging it. I'm throwing up. I'm sick. I was never good at this. Never, ever good at this. But it changed the way I felt. And I got, one time I was going to Headland High School, and the principal came up and woke me up. I had taken these pills. This girl gave me these pills. I was highly, you could tell me what to do, and I just did it. Just let me hang around. I just want to be your buddy. I just want to be your friend. If whatever you tell me to do, I'm going to do it. And she said, take this pill before 6th period, take this one after. And I did it, and I passed out. Well, they kicked me out of Headland High School, sent me to College Park High School, told me there weren't any drugs at College Park High School. Well, there was a lot of drugs at College Park High School. It's part of my story. If I'm in a meeting, I don't talk about drugs. This is Alcoholics Anonymous, and we have a singleness of purpose. But you got to know how I got here. And this is how I got here, alcohol and drugs. But I also got to College Park, and there were not just white people there. There were black people there. I was so excited. I got to see people that weren't just like me. You know, it was fabulous. But, and then this one girl, she said she knew a bar we could all get in. Okay. Well, I didn't like my big sister, so I took her driver's license. And me and Miss Better than Everybody went to the bar with her in my pocket. Well, the bar was on Cheshire Bridge Road, and it was Sweet Gumhead. And Sweet Gumhead was a drag bar. I walked in there. I'm in a whole nother world. I'm about 3 sheets to the wind when we got there. But there was a world about to open up to Joyce. What? I was home. Until I got to AA, that was the first place I belonged. Because for once in my life, I wasn't going to hell for who I was. If I was, I was going with some fun people. I mean, some seriously fun people. And a whole lot of rhinestones. It was amazing. And, you know, it was fun. Until it wasn't fun. I was in that bar one night, and we had to go out, you know, at like 6 o'clock at night, because you got to have a reason to be going somewhere. And I was 16. And we had driven over there from East Point, and this guy got in my car. I had gone outside to get some air, because I still knew how to do that. And I was sitting in my car, and this man got in, and he put his hand around my throat and told me to drive. And I did, but I was raped in that car. This was the second time in my life I'd been raped. And there was nobody I could tell, you know. I went back in the bar beat up, and my friends took care of me, but I couldn't go home and tell my parents. What am I going to tell them? I was in a gay bar on Cheshire Bridge Road, and I was supposed to be in East Point. I didn't tell anybody. There's another thing I got rid of in that 2 years of fetal position therapy when I got sober. But I kept trying. I wanted to be able to do this thing because I loved the way alcohol made me feel. I never liked the taste of it, but I loved the way it made me feel. I could dance. I could talk to you because I was always scared. I could talk to you. People wanted to talk to me. I was the best lover, by the way, in all of Atlanta, Georgia. And I was it. I was it. And I was not picky because I was going to hell for being gay, so I had to sleep with a whole lot of men to balance that out. So we had some real issues going on. And, you know, when you wake up with both, then you're covered. You're not going to hell, Joyce. You're okay. But where is your car? I don't know. Who are these people? I don't know. I had this one woman tell me one morning, she's like, "You're a lot sexier drunk." I thought, hell, I'm a lot of anything drunk. I don't even know who I am. Now I got to go. I can't talk to you. I do not talk to people when I'm not drinking. So, but for me, alcoholics were men, not women. Alcohol was not the problem. So there had to be a way that I could find to do this thing. And I kept trying. A friend of mine and I were at her dad's house one night. We're shooting pool in the basement. And around us are all these bottles of liquor. The pool table's kind of down in this little hole in the basement. I woke up on the back of a Trailways bus. Got this handsome little young man's picture in a brass frame in my hand, like it came off his mama's mantle. And I'm on my way to Panama City Beach. That's what the ticket said. I didn't know. I look over, there's a girl sitting across the bus from me. And she asked me my name, and I told her. I said, "Joyce." She said, "Pruitt?" Yes. Well, it turns out one of those times that I ran away from home and I was in juvenile, they sent me to Salvation Army Girls Lodge. This little girl that was on the bus, young girl, was one of my roommates there. And she and I had fallen in love with these little boys that we met one day, and we were going to run away to Mardi Gras. And, of course, we got caught because, you know, we were stupid. But we got caught. But this is this girl. She's on this Trailways bus. You talk about moments that God just swoops down and goes, "I got you, kid. I got you. But you're going to earn this one." She says, "Why don't you stay at my parents' house tonight before you go on to Florida, on to Panama City?" She lived in Wewahitchka, Florida. That's about 40 miles outside of Panama City Beach on a pig farm. It was nasty, and I was hung over. And I'm not talking about little bitty Wilbers. I'm talking about big old hogs. It was scary. I walked in. Her mama had this machete-looking thing. She's coming down on the table, chopping up pork chop. I was like, "Dear God." So I get out of there the next day. She gives me a bag of pork chop she's cooked for me. I'm like, "Oh, my stars." I'm begging. "Okay, God, please send me somebody safe." This van pulls up beside me. This guy's like, "You need a ride?" Oh, my God. Here we go. I've heard these stories. So I get in the van. There's a Bible on the console. He's a young Baptist minister. And he preached to me all the way to the Panama City Rescue Mission. They set me up, and they sent me back home. The first year of my sobriety, I earned a vacation for the first time in my life. And I went to Panama City, and I went by that rescue mission and paid them back for the bus fare that they had given me. But when I walked in, I said, "You know, I want to pay you back." And this guy's like, "We don't have a form for pay us back. Nobody's ever come in to pay us back." I said, "Well, then let's make it a donation." So, you know, God shows up, man. He shows up. We don't know it at the time. You know, hindsight's 20/20 because we're stopping looking at it. We can stop, stare at it, and go, "Oh, that's when God showed up. Okay." He sent a guy named Lonnie. I didn't have anywhere to stay. And it took a couple of days for him to get that ticket ready to send me back home. He got a room at a motel in downtown Panama City. He slept in a chair. And he told me that he would hope that if his little sister was ever out there like I was, that someone would do the same for her. and he was very kind, and he took me to the bus stop when it was time, and he sent me on my way back home. But I just wasn't good at this. You know, I ended up in other places, in wrong places. I ended up hurt a lot. And smart mouth, oh my God, you think it's smart today, because some of y'all have heard it. I mean, it was just bad back then. I just wanted to be wanted, you know. I wanted to be liked. I was funny, so that helped, you know. The class clown can come, but only for a little while, you know. If you don't have character to go with it, then you're in trouble. As Maggie used to say, when she got here, she was a character, and then she had character. It takes time to build that, you know. It does. It takes time. When I went to my, well, actually, I was 18. I had wrecked another car, totaled another car. And I went to see my juvenile probation officer. And she said, George, you're an alcoholic. No. First of all, I was cute as hell. And I had on this little security guard uniform with a little badge. And I had a whistle and everything. So, you know, I was really, really sharp. And I said, no. First of all, I'm a girl. Second, I'm really cute, and I have a badge, and I have a job and a car. So, no, alcoholics are men, homeless men. She said, well, go over to Fulton County Detox and talk to Betty. Okay. So Betty B was there. I went up. Well, first I rode around the building for a while. Then I went in. She looked at me. She's like, are you here for alcoholism? Why else would I be in this place, you know? I said, I guess, and I went around the hall and sat down. There's this guy there. He keeps asking me my name over and over. And I'm thinking, okay, this is an alcoholic. I'm looking cuter by the minute. He's the serious alcoholic. And then this lady comes around the corner that looked like Sally Struthers used to look. And I was like, okay, maybe I'm an alcoholic. She called my name, and I said, yes, ma'am, I'm here. I'm an alcoholic. And just whatever, let me be. I'm going to go wherever you go, okay? And I ended up going into a 30-day detox thing. And they sent this lady in. She must have been 110 years old. She's shaking all over. She's got a needle in her hand, fixing to give me a shot. I'm like, oh, hell no. And I stood up on the bed, and I'm screaming, no! Well, here comes this black woman. She weighed about 300 pounds. She flipped me over, and she jammed that thing in my butt. I did not argue with this lady no more. Bring her on. I'm good. So I go through this. Well, I'm still fighting this whole gay thing because I'm going to hell. So I'm trying to figure out how to not drink or how to drink and not, you know, end up in the wrong place. How to be able to drink and not get naked. That's what I wanted to know. But nobody ever had the answer to that. So I have to go to this detox thing. So she says, when I'm trying to figure out the whole gay thing, she said, well, look at your fingernails. So I looked at my fingernails like this. She said, well, there you go. I said, what? She said, men look at their fingernails like this. Women look at their fingernails like this. I know I'm a woman, fool. I'm trying to figure out how not to go to hell for being gay. So that's how much therapy I got for that. So I leave there feeling really sorry for these people that were in the meeting because they're in this big old room and their little foam rubber shoes. It was sad. You know, they got on hospital gowns and they looked bad, really rough and homeless looking. And here I go. I'm still real cute. So I'm out the door and didn't go back for a while. And then things would go wrong. And I'd remember that meeting down there. And I'd go back down there for a minute. Then I'd go home, then I'd wreck my car, wake up in the wrong place again, getting kicked out of places that I lived in, you know, destroying friendships. I used to go to the bar, I mean, I'd race, okay, I'll be at the bar, they'd throw me out, I broke my nose, I've got a crease on it. I got thrown out of Garbo's one time, and I landed flat on my face in the ice, busted my nose, she got to fix my nose, send me home. Well, I go home from the bar. I'm drunk. I'm crying because I'm gay. I'm going to hell. And I call Baptist preachers. I look them up in the phone book. We used to have these, if y'all were young, we used to have these things you had to look up phone numbers in. You didn't say, hey, Google, how do you call Allah? You had to look it up. So I look up Baptist preachers. And I call them up and ask them. Now, they're sleep, I woke them up, and I'd ask them if I was going to hell. And they told me yes. So then I would call the radio stations in Atlanta, and I would have them play me sad songs because it was pitiful that I was going to go to hell because of who I was. So, you know, I was a little drama there, but all by myself, doing this all by myself. Well, when I was 24, I'd been in and out, not in and out. I'd never been in this program. I'd been in a meeting and out, and in a meeting and out. I remember one time I picked up my 30-day chip. Mary Mack picked up 87 years. Her daughter picked up 60 years. I don't know what it was. It was some obscene amount of time. And I walked from where the, you used to have a payphone in the Biscayne room when you come in the door. Now it's where the phone used to be. And I walked from there up to the bar to pick up that 30-day chip. That was a long walk to go get that thing. Well, I get back in the car with Mary Mack's granddaughter, who was my friend. And I said, you know, in out of respect for my 30 days of not drinking, I'm not going to smoke any pot tonight. Okay, well, there you go. If you're celebrating your sobriety by smoking a joint, you ain't sober, okay? So that had to get changed, too. So I'm 24. I end up at the same lady's house that I had that first beer at. She's getting a frosted wine glass out of her refrigerator. And she said, Joyce, I'd offer you something. I don't want to mess up what you're doing in AA. I said, no, it's okay. I'm in AA. So I can have it. They teach us this. Okay, yeah. If you're new, if somebody on here that's thinking you can have a glass of wine, no, you can't have a glass of wine, smoke a joint, and be sober. You can do it and go to meetings, but guess what? So, a few glasses of amaretto, a few glasses of wine, smoke a little outside issue, and here we go. This is not why I came here. This is not why I went to that house that night. And I remember thinking, and I hope I never forget, I don't ever want to feel this way again. I had done what the book said. I had tried some controlled drinking. I couldn't control it. I wrecked my cars. I tear apart relationships. I scare my daddy to death. And here I am, and I can't control this. Well, she kicked me out because her husband's coming home, so I get kicked out of the house. And I'm in Clayton County, mad as hell. The police pulled me over. And he's telling me I'm weaving. I told him, you get me 75, I'll never come back here again. And I didn't. I was 30 years sober before I went back to Clayton County, ever. I went to Fulton County Detox that next night. It was a Monday night, and I picked up what I hope will be my last white chip, and that was June 7th, 1981. And Mary Mack, I miss her so much. She was just a love. And she loved me, and it was she was somebody in my life that I never doubted loved me. She made sure I knew where the meetings were. I went to meetings at Easy Does It and Cosmopolitan across the street from the Capitol downtown. If you can't get sober, or you tell people you can't get sober because they're, it's all straight, or it's all gay, or they're men, or they're women. I got sober with older, straight, black men who loved me, and I loved them. Leroy would be at that door every Tuesday night, and he knew my name, and he greeted me. And when I went to the International in Toronto a few years ago, I got to the gate. Who stands up? First of all, it was Helen from Central Office, and then Leroy, and he comes and shakes my hand. It's good to see you, Joyce. Good to see you too, Leroy. This was many, 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 many years down the road. I went to the Biscayne room, and because Carlton kept talking about it, he would come to the Fulton County Detox meetings, and he'd talk about the Biscayne room, always talking about the Atlanta Biscayne room. And if this Georgia cracker gets sober in a weed patch, you can get sober too. I loved that man. He wore his shorts right up to his breast, and he had his socks, and he sat in the same place every time. And he was so sweet, he would call me and ask me if I would take him to a meeting. Oh, he lived on the bus line, but okay. So I'd go down and pick him up and take him to the meeting. Well, we get back home to his place, and he'd give me $5. I don't want $5. Take it. And what I learned down the road, he was making sure I had gas money to get myself to meetings for the rest of the week. I'd take him twice. The rest of it was up to me. Mary Mac told me to go to a speaker meeting, a big book study, a step study, and a discussion meeting every week. And I did that. And I went to Maggie's meeting at the at Easy Does It. And, buddy, you want to learn the big book, go to a meeting with Maggie Harrison. Let me tell you, you read one paragraph, one sentence. You read that sentence. You ain't graduating this thing. And you had to share. Oh, my God, I could not stand that woman. But I stayed sober. Maggie and I were like oil and water. And she taught me how to live this program. She taught me how to put principles before personalities because she did it with me. Because I know I was a reflection of a younger her. So I wanted to be Mary Mac. I didn't get to be that. I got to be Maggie. But I was learning how to have fun. Billy B. taught me how to have fun. He took me to Fun in the Sun in Panama City. First time I'd ever danced sober was with him. It was a trip. He taught me the foxtrot. And, you know, I went to the Panama City trip with the Biscayne. With Biscayne. Well, Richard English had 5 years. And they gave him a watch that had the face of it was a blue chip. Well, I'm freaking out. I've got like 2 years. And I'm like, man, you get 5 years, you get a watch. You don't get a watch at 5 years. You don't get one at 10 years. At 20 years, Mary Mac gave me my chip. And I looked at it. Don't do this either. It's real stupid, and it's not a very respectful thing of your grandmother standing there, which is what she was like to me. I looked at it, and I was like, I got 20 effing years. And she went like, and put her hand in my mouth. I thought she was literally going to pop me in the mouth. Don't do that. You know, I have had some of the most incredible times in sobriety. I mean, incredible. I have traveled. Last year I had the unbelievable opportunity to serve on a mission trip to Kenya. I was there for 2 weeks. It was phenomenal. It will make you come home and throw away everything you've got that you think you've got to have when you see people trying to put mud and water together to make walls for their homes. And all they want is their children to be healthy, to be in shelter, to have clean water, and there's none of that. Man, I got a whole little appreciation for what all I'm blessed with in this country. Or how well we do or don't get along with each other these days, we are truly blessed to be in here. I got married when I had 14 years to my Mary, who was just amazing. And 10 years later, we got divorced. And I swear we had the best marriage and the best divorce of anybody I've ever known. And we've been best friends for a long time. She has a year less in Al-Anon as I have in AA. She lost her son David to a drunk driver when he was 25. So she earned her seat in Al-Anon. I earned mine in AA. You know, I was able to get a sponsor. Not Mary Mac, because Mary Mac, I kept saying, when somebody said, who's your sponsor, I just say Mary Mac. She said, I'm not your sponsor. She said, you got to get somebody you can talk to, Joyce, and I'm not it. And she was right. I was afraid. I didn't want to say things that would make her feel bad about me, you know. So I asked around, and the name that kept coming up was Judy P. You need Judy P. Okay. So I got Judy P. And she said, well, we'll see how it goes. Well, thank you. Okay. We'll see how it goes on my end, too. All right. How about that? So here we are, some 38 years later. It's going pretty good. I talked to her right before I came on here tonight, and I told her, I spoke Monday for a noon meeting, and I said, you know, I don't know what it is all these years, there's something for me still about hearing her voice before I do this. And then I turn it over to the God of my understanding and ask for his message to be given to whoever needs to hear that. You know, today, I after the recession, I lost everything that was important to me, at least that I thought was important to me, not the people, but my home that Mary and I had built, my business, cars, it was all gone, just gone. And it took me a long time to come back from that, emotionally, mentally, financially. This year, I bought a beautiful little cabin in Blue Ridge. It's got a gorgeous pond in front of it where that deer comes to play. In the back, when I open the blind on that kitchen door in the morning, there's a mountain back there that I get to see. I say good morning to the mountain. And then I walk out on my porch and I have that prayer meditation time with God. And I get to watch the deer come and play with her baby. And life is good today. I have been given the honor today that my Mary lives here now because she needed to live here. And, you know, we take this a day at a time. Don't burn bridges. You know, when you say you love somebody, mean that. No matter what that takes in your life, no matter what, how that changes. We're certainly not married anymore. Neither one of us want to go there. My preacher came out here because she joined our church, and he said, does anybody want to get married? And I looked at her and said, well, Mary, she said, not one was enough. Thank you very much. I'm like, yeah, appreciate it. So, but, you know, we never know who's going to need us or how much we're going to need them at some point in our lives. So I'm grateful and I'm honored to be able to care for her today. And we do the best we can, you know. My life is good today. I am sober today. I am a member in good standing of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a member of the Serenity Group in Blue Ridge. I still have that same sponsor who today has become more of a friend than, you know, it's not somebody I work the steps with anymore, but she's sure the one I call when it hits a fan. She got me through this change in how I live today with, because I've lived alone for the last 15 years. So, and so has Mary. And it's very obvious when you put the both of us back in a house that we're not used to this. But if we're going to have to do it with anybody, it's best that it's each other. I just keep doing it what's in front of me every day. I'm in school. I'm getting my bachelor's degree in human services. I started out with psychology, so I'm going to end up with a bachelor's in psychology and associate's in human services. And my goal is transitional housing for the homeless here. I want a working farm. Mary and I had a nonprofit in Atlanta for 12 years. I have a passion for the homeless, and I want to work with them, and I want to help them to know how they got there. I want them to have the opportunity to get on their feet in a way they've never had, where they're respected and loved the way you people respected and loved me until I could do it for myself, and you still do it. I grew up in the rooms of AA. I was 24 years old, wide open. And you people loved me. And you watched me go through everything I went through, everything good and bad. When my daddy died, I was in the rooms. I went to Biscayne that night. When my best friend Chip Houston died, I didn't think I was going to make it. I loved that man with all my heart. And when I felt his stop beating, something in me stopped beating. And it was very, very hard to come back from that. But I'm here, and I'm still sober. So my message to anybody tonight is no matter how good it gets, no matter how bad it gets, we don't ever have to drink again. I have something I like to read when I finish, just in case nobody did get anything out of this. That's your fault. That's actually God's fault because I gave it to him. I read this because it, for me, describes what this program has done for me, who I was when I got here, and who I am today. And it's the last page of the Keys of the Kingdom in the big book. I changed one word just to qualify my own sobriety. Time. The last 39 years of my life have been rich and meaningful. I have had my share of problems, heartaches, and disappointments because that is life. But also I have known a great deal of joy and a peace that is the handmaiden of an inner freedom. I have a wealth of friends, and with my AA friends, an unusual quality of fellowship. For to these people, I am truly related. First through mutual pain and despair, and later through mutual objectives, a newfound faith and hope. And as the years go by, working together, sharing our experiences with one another, and also sharing a mutual trust, understanding, and love without strings, without obligation, we acquire relationships that are unique and priceless. There is no more aloneness with that awful ache so deep in the heart of every alcoholic that nothing before could ever reach it. That ache is gone and never need return again. Now there is a sense of belonging, of being wanted and needed and loved in return for a bottle and a hangover. We have been given the keys of the kingdom. Thank y'all.
Thank you, Joyce. Boy, there's a lot of love in this room, and you poured it on us, and we're going to give it right back to you. I'm going to start unmuting some folks, and they're going to share their gratitude with you. I'm asking people to unmute.
Joyce, that was real. I'm Gary, and I'm an alcoholic, and I really enjoyed your story. You know, being a, I'm just going to say it, being a gay man in America isn't easy. You know, my dad was a Marine. I found out he was the most compassionate one, though, ironically. But anyways, I really got a lot out of your story, and thanks a lot for sharing that with us.
Thank you, Gary.
Joyce, I love you so.
I can see
you 24 and all your rhinestones and wide open. and that's awesome. And congratulations on what you're doing now. I'm so proud of you. Proud to be your friend.
Thank you, darling. I love you very much.
Thank you, Joyce. I'm Anna Doris. I'm an alcoholic. I really like what you said about the not burning bridges and keeping the relationships open with our fellow alcoholics and our fellow mankind, because for me it's always been sort of, if you don't do what I want you to do, you and I are out of here. You're toast. And that's something to be balanced and to be steady and to be kind, and it's a challenge and not a challenge, but it's anyway, it was good what you just said. Thank you
again, Doris.
Hi, Joyce, I'm Jane. I'm an alcoholic. I certainly appreciate you sharing, and I join with you with the problem with homelessness, because I work with a volunteer organization, but I've had to say I'm powerless over homelessness because it drives me so crazy. But I'm glad somebody's not powerless, and maybe I won't be someday. We do our best, but it's a huge problem.
Indeed.
My name is Gary, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Gary.
You were throwing out some legendary names, Maggie, Mary Mac. And, of course, a fellow that was never short of personality, Richard English. Yeah, I have a picture of him with Maggie when he actually had red hair. That's I think we're right around 5 years, maybe.
Yep, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, but they're, because those are very warm-hearted people, and the more that we end up remembering people like that, the better off all of us will be. But thanks for what you shared.
Yeah.
Thank you, Gary.
And real quick, Joyce, I like I like the sobriety in Blue Ridge. I've been there several times, and there's some really great people there in clubs.
Stand me up here, holler at me. Come on out to the pond.
Joyce, Jim McIntosh, I'm a grateful alcoholic.
Hi, Jim.
I'm a big follower of Chuck Chamberlain. And he talks about identification instead of disidentification. And listening to your story, I'm thinking, well, hell, she and I grew up together in different places. Because my childhood was stimulated yours, paralleled yours extensively. And so I'm grateful to hear your story.
Thank you. Look forward to yours next week.
Well, don't go too far down that road.
Yeah, everybody, we are looking
forward. I don't want nobody to be disappointed.
We are looking forward. Next week, Jim's coming back, and he's going to tell his story. We sure would love to have everyone back for that.
First I slip, and then I crept to a hope-filled dream. You rescued me, and finally, waking there I see. I look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. Takes me where the promises are real. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, stride for stride, we walk eternally. Look into love's window for a heart that beats for me. Takes me where the promises are real. And I always long for something that sets me free. Take me where the promise is.